Our Bible reading this week came from Matthew 27, which is, of course, the crucifixion story. And so it seemed fitting this morning to draw our thoughts to prepare us for the table from Matthew 27. I actually just want to look at one verse, and not even one verse, but one phrase in one verse, verse 46, where Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? What are we to make of those words? They are odd. Did God forsake Jesus on the cross? For decades, I've listened to teachers try to explain how that might be. And yet, we're still left with questions. If that is so, does Jesus not understand what's happening? Its significance. They're arguably the most controversial words that Jesus spoke from the cross, but perhaps unnecessarily. The real text I want to work this morning is in Psalm 22. Will you go there? Because if you look at Psalm 22 and verse 1, what we find is that Jesus is actually quoting at least a portion of that first verse from the cross. If you look at verse 1, my God, why have you forsaken me? There it is, right? And so we look at that and we draw a line back from Matthew 27 to Psalm 22 and we say, well, those are the words he spoke. And unfortunately, too often, that is where we stop when we read Psalm 22. I think there's more there, and I invite you to consider that with me this morning as we prepare to come to the table. In Psalm 22, David is experiencing his own ordeal. And in that way, what he says in the psalm has a connection to Christ, though the two aren't comparable. Both are experiencing an ordeal of suffering. And in his suffering, he does what all children of God do. He cries out to God, and yet it doesn't seem like God is hearing. Verse 1, my God, why have you forsaken me? Far from my deliverance are the words of my groaning. Oh my God, I cry by day, but you do not answer, and by night, but I have no rest. Who cannot relate to those feelings? Have you been there? I have prayed and prayed and prayed and nothing has changed. Where is God? Why has he forsaken me? David finds this odd in part because he knows God's history of faithfulness. You look at verse 4. He said, in you our ancestors put their trust. They trusted and you delivered them. To you they cried out and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. And so David's problem is his theology is not lining up with his experience. I know who you are. I know what you've done. I know you are a faithful God. But if you are, where are you now? As he continues through the psalm, David will describe his own ordeal. And it's in the details of that that this really begins to get interesting. Pick up with me in verse 6. David said, but I am a worm and not a man, a reproach of men, and despised by the people. All who see me sneer at me. They separate with the lip. They wag the head saying, commit yourself to the Lord and he will deliver him. Let him rescue him because he delights in him. And now this gets interesting. Because verse number 8 is also quoted in Matthew 27. Just a few verses up in verse 43. The enemies of Jesus say that exact thing to him. If God delights in you, let God come and rescue you. Verse 11. Be not far from me, for trouble is near. For there is none to help. Many bulls have surrounded me. Strong bulls of Bashan have encircled me. They open wide their mouth at me. As a ravening and roaring lion, I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted within me. My strength is dried up like potsherd. My tongue cleaves to my jaws. You lay me in the dust of death. For dogs have surrounded me. A band of evildoers have encompassed me. They pierced my hands and feet. I can count all my bones. They look, they stare at me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. And all of a sudden we hear the echoes of Calvary. Verse 16, that's what they did to Jesus. He pierced his hands and his feet. Verse 18, they're dividing up the garments. And we get to this part of the psalm and we start to think maybe there's more here about Jesus than just the quote from the first part of verse 1. There's more to see. Maybe David, as he writes the psalm, has a bigger picture in mind than just his own problem. It appears he's looking forward and commenting on what Christ will suffer and endure. But if that is so, then appreciate that verse 18 isn't the end. There's more to the psalm. Let's continue. Verse 19. But you, O Lord, be not far off. O you, my help, hasten to my assistance. Deliver my soul from the sword, my life, my only life, from the power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth, from the horns of the wild oxen. You answer me. I will tell of your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, glorify in him. Stand in awe of him. All you descendants of Israel. Watch 24. For he has not despised, nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, nor has he hidden his face from him. But when he cried to him for help, he heard. The Psalm of David opens by questioning God's absence, but it closes by celebrating his deliverance. What begins as a lament ends with a celebration, leaving me to wonder if perhaps we have missed entirely the point of Jesus' citation of this song. With those words, my God, why have you forsaken me? Perhaps Jesus was not intending that we would only consider the one phrase at the very beginning. Perhaps Jesus is inviting us to consider the whole psalm. And when we do, what do we find? Not just that David complained, where is God when I need him? But the whole picture of his process of wrestling with his moment of adversity that begins with complaint, but that ends with celebration as God comes to his deliverance. So maybe Psalm 22 is meant to give us the whole picture of the cross. In that moment, as he hung there dying, it may have appeared that God had forsaken Jesus, but in truth, that was not the case at all. God never forsook him. He was still there and would continue to be with him and ultimately would deliver him. Giving us a reason this morning to celebrate as we come to the table and share this meal. As Troy reminded us last week, we do not simply celebrate his death, but his resurrection from the dead. That gives us victory, that gave his victory, and ours as well. Which is why we come to the celebrate, to come to the table today, not merely to lament his suffering and death, but to celebrate his victory and ours.